A whole gang of media snoopers, including Jonathan Marks, scans from D.C. to daylight every Thursday here on Radio Netherlands. Their super-duper whopper-doppler-receiver gizmos pick out the essence of what's happening in the world of international broadcasting. Radio Netherlands, we have the technology.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
This is the Dutch International Service. Media Network, Radio Netherlands Communications Magazine, hosted by Jonathan Marks and Diana Janssen.
Welcome. This program is different because we're focusing on one of the few external broadcasting services operating in Africa.
And later on there'll be media news from the Pacific. But first, a few months ago we visited South Africa and reported on how the domestic radio service over there is changing. We've now had an opportunity to welcome Lubona Mosia, executive editor of Channel Africa here in Hilversum, for talks about ways in which Radio Netherlands and Channel Africa can work together in the future.
Reason enough to look at what's coming out of Johannesburg, the majority of which is not in English.
Kuno ndi kuchichewa 7 ya Channel Africa kuchokera ku Johannesburg.
So, what's the focus at the moment?
I think the immediate question that Channel Africa needs to focus on is the whole issue of changing its image as it was perceived in the past. The main focus, the forte of Channel Africa, is information and education. If people really want to be entertained, they go on to FM and listen to FM. They can listen to music the whole day on these FM stations. But the reason why they would tune in to shortwave, particularly an external broadcaster, is because in Africa they want to hear things as they should be, not as the local broadcasters, state broadcasts do, which is to try and propagate the centric or government point of view. So I think Channel Africa needs to continue along that line of being seen as an alternative to state broadcasters. That is fundamental. The second thing, of course, is that of trying to show that in many debates at home in South Africa, which we can do that through various programs that we have, of showing the nature of type of debates that are going on in South Africa about democracy, about the whole issue. There's a Truth and Reconciliation Commission which is starting sometime at the end of this month or middle of this month. We would like a very great broadcast of this so that people should know what is happening and to see that in South Africa we are trying to redress the iniquities of the past.
Is it difficult to re-establish credibility, bearing in mind that, Radio RSA and also various broadcasts by the South African Defence Forces in languages, for example, like Spanish into Angola, were designed to destabilise the whole region?
No, I mean, the biggest problem, Jonathan, we have in terms of corporate image is inside South Africa more than outside South Africa. And I think it's because people cannot reach us inside the country. So they really do not know exactly what message we are sending across. But in those countries where we are being daily monitored and received, people have realized that we represent something different, something different values than those of the Radio RSA.
Looking back at the process of change you have been going through, what was your biggest challenge?
It's affirmative corrective action inside the SABC itself. It's been a traumatic experience. It's still a traumatic experience. I mean, if one considers the fact that there was about 1% of black management at the SABC about 3-4 years ago, and today we are talking of 27%. Now, that can tell you how much social engineering is taking place within the SABC. And, of course, this is not an unpainful process. It's very, very painful. Many people have seen their careers being sort of ruined by black people coming into the picture. Black people are seeing themselves, their future being within the SABC. The white male Afrikaner is seeing himself as an endangered species within the SABC and the broad generally South Africa. So that has been very painful. The other thing, of course, that has been painful is to find people to take over those positions, because the system itself didn't prepare people for those positions. One has had to go outside sometimes of South Africa to get people to do those type of social engineering process. I have been highly criticized at home for employing people at high levels who are not South Africans. I've defended that position, and people have really come to appreciate why I did that, because we haven't had a tradition of external broadcasting at home. People didn't know but we didn't have people who would teach other people how to do that, and I didn't want to employ people at high levels who need to be taught.
You yourself used to be involved in Radio Freedom. Mm-hmm. How does your work now for Channel Africa compare with the days of Radio Freedom, when you were broadcasting a message of a different nature?
It's really changed, yeah. One of the things I miss is being a journalist now. Now I'm a manager. It's a pity. But I still wish I could sit like this in a studio and interview people. I don't do that anymore. But it's a challenge. I feel it's a challenge, because now one is not talking on behalf of the ANC. One is talking as a journalist in the true sense of the word, in the sense that you are saying I'm guided by an independent editorial policy. I'm not trying to sell a policy of a government. I'm not trying to sell a policy of a party or of an individual. I'm guided by journalistic ethics. And that really is something of a big leap in my life.
Flame Newtonhausen is head of programs at Channel Africa in Johannesburg. He has a background teaching African languages in the region and explains that South Africa's external service made a conscious effort to serve the area it knows best.
Jonathan, yes, in a sense, RSA used to also broadcast way back to the Netherlands, to the Americas and Germany, and we had Dutch services, German services, etc. But since about more than, I would say, 6-7 years ago, when we started looking at the changes in the world and also in particular in Africa, we then also on financial terms, we cut down the services to Netherlands and the others, and we are now concentrating mainly on Africa. At present, since I would say about 5 years, 6 years ago, we were broadcasting mainly in the following languages, mainly English, French, Portuguese, Kiswahili, Chinyanja, Silozi, and Tsonga.
Are all these languages related? I mean, do they come from the same root, or are they completely different? So in other words, if you hear one language, you cannot understand the other one.
They are all so-called, in Meinhof's terms, old Meinhof's terms, Bantu languages. But obviously there's a major difference between probably Swahili and Chinyanja, for instance, and as well as Tsonga and Shona. You get some people in Africa who are able to understand more than one languages, because of it all depends on how close to other neighboring countries they were living.
So in a sense, the European languages are such a dying out. Is that fair to say?
I won't say that, because English, obviously being the international language, we are still broadcasting daily to Africa. But obviously we realize on our trips to Africa, especially in the rural areas, that a lot of people do not understand English that well. Yes, they can, in the small environment, and go to a shop, they can buy some stuff in English, and they have a vocabulary. But once you're going in a broader sense, and especially educational terms, those people, particularly the younger people, are not sure about the language, English itself, so they would learn quite easily much more in their own home language, and they appreciate it quite a lot. We also receive quite a lot of letters asking to have more and more African language services on air, because each and everybody wants to hear his own language on air.
From the journalistic point of view, the old Radio RSA was the voice of South Africa. It was also a voice very much of one political party. What's happening now?
Yes, it was indeed a case where we were government funded, and obviously in those years people outside called us a propaganda station, because obviously the main issue was to sell South Africa to the rest of the world and to counter some of the other information in other countries. But as I said, since our change, we've changed our policy drastically, that we want to become a very information station who's honest and the people can rely on. And there's no way in the world that if you still, let's call it then, lying to people, that they're going to listen to you, because obviously we're in competition with BBC, Deutsche Welle, and other international radio stations. And obviously, our listeners in Africa do listen to different stations. And then if you carry on telling the opposite what the other station's saying, they obviously will say, but these guys are not on par what's going on in the world.
Sibona laba bantu sibona laba bantu sibona bekhatha zimile baloko kwenzekayo sibona laba bantu.
Previously in the old system, I would say that a lot of white people were a bit ignorant to the African languages, but even so, since way back, they had in schools African languages were normally taken up by white kids. But I think even now today, or even a couple of years ago, people realized the importance of the ability to speak in a particular language, because it opens doors for yourself and it makes it very easy. If I go suddenly to Europe and I suddenly hear an Afrikaans-speaking person there, I very gladly say, yes, where are you from? And that's the same attitude. If you go to Africa and you can at least say, good morning, how are you? You could see people lighten up and see that they are interested, and at least this guy has taken the time to learn at least some of his languages, because language is culture. Through the language, you also learn a lot of the culture of the person, and you understand much better certain tendencies in their lifestyle and their way of living.
Do you have a favorite language that you've learned?
Well, obviously, I'm born Zambian, and I've grown up near the Botswana border, and particularly the Tswana language. I've grown up as a kid, play with the kids as from childhood on, and I've taken up as a subject, and it was part of my I've lecturing in it for about 10 years. So that would be probably my first language that I always turn back to. But the another language that mostly last year's interested me is Swahili, who's speaking about 70, 75 million in Africa. So I'm also in the stage in trying to learn that as much as possible.
But if funding permits, Channel Africa plans to expand its number of languages. Lebona Musiya again.
Yeah, we at the moment are busy looking at the question of Arabic. But Arabic is also complicated by the fact that there are different dialects of Arabic, and the whole issue we are trying to find out, and we know that Radio Netherlands closed its Arabic services for many reasons. Maybe one of them was the question of dialect. I don't know, maybe the whole issue was also you were using the wrong waveband in terms of targeting. We are looking into that, and one of the reasons why I'm visiting Radio Netherlands is to exchange opinion on that. It's important for us to broadcast in Arabic, because it's the most widely spoken language on the African continent. The second most important language in Africa is Hausa, which is directed at particularly Nigeria. And I think it's important at this particular stage to target Nigeria. But it's also a Fulani language, which is spoken by various people in West Africa, not only Nigeria. So it's important that we should introduce Hausa, which is something that we are looking into. It's really going to depend what funding we're getting.
You hinted on funding there. I mean, you carry commercials now. Is that working out?
It is. We have been doing commercials for the past 2 years, I think. We have generated some money, but not enough. And I don't think, from the experience of other international broadcasters, it's difficult to make even on international broadcasting in terms of advertising. Why? Because advertisers normally don't believe our figures, because they use the national statistics of listenership, which is based on EMS figures that are freely available every month or every third month, every quarter. We cannot afford that, because it's very, very expensive to do, surveys. That's why, for instance, Channel Africa and Radio Netherlands are discussing to try and cooperate and do these things together, which is going to be very cost effective.
South Africa is quite often in the media press here because of the development, on the one hand, of the satellite television services, for example, from MultiChoice, MNET. On the other hand, because of the development of the Clockwork Wireless, which is in Cape Town. Is radio still important inside South Africa, or are you going to see a gradual move to satellite television?
No, Jonathan, I mean, radio is very, very important. It is estimated about 100 million radios in Africa, and it is said that most of those radios are in North Africa and South Africa, basically. If you look at the fact that in South Africa, most people, the majority are black people, we still have 60% of the country has no access to electricity. So that goes to tell you how much radio is important for your listenership. But, I mean, how many people can afford, I mean, to put in a satellite dish costing 1,500 rands, and also to buy a decoder, and after that to pay a monthly fee? Very few people can afford to do that. So radio still remains important. And, I mean, most people in the urban areas listen to radio when they're driving to work and when they come back from work. So it's their very critical source of information.
Until recently, Channel Africa had a lunchtime slot on the domestic service, giving a window on the African world. It's now been reduced to a weekly roundup on Sundays.
Hello and welcome to this Thursday afternoon edition of Dateline Africa on 104 to 107 FM. I'm Pat Komafani.
And I'm Astrid Askar. And for the next half hour, we'll be keeping you up to date with the latest news and views from around the continent.
Coming up in today's program, more condemnation of...
You mentioned listening to radio in the car, but if you listen in the car, you usually don't listen to shortwave, but to medium wave. Do you have any plans to broadcast on medium wave in the future?
Yeah, the Independent Broadcasting Authority has asked us to apply for a license, a broadcasting license, and we intend to apply for it on shortwave, but as well as on medium wave. There are two reasons for this. One is that we would like that the taxpayer who pays for our existence should know what we're saying, and possibly this could change the whole corporate image that people have of Channel Africa. That's one level. On second level is also that our medium wave can reach up to some parts of Tanzania and Kenya at night. This is actually existing at the moment, because we've got Radio Metro, which people in Malawi listen to quite clear.
The SABC used to run its own technical facilities, but with the growth of commercial radio, it started to work more as a business unit, running transmitters for other stations too, like Radio 702 just outside of Johannesburg. In 1992, a separate company was formed. Neil Smuts is the managing director of what's called Centec, and explains that AM is not as important as FM, at least at the moment.
Now, internally, FM is the main broadcasting medium, at least for radio broadcasting. We use a little bit of medium wave, but it's more in a supplementary way. I think medium wave is going to become to make a little bit of a comeback because there are demands for more spectrum, with new more stations being licensed. Part of the political transformation in South Africa becoming a democratic country includes having a diversity of media, more voices on the air, owned by different people. So our Independent Broadcasting Authority intends to issue quite a number of licenses, and particularly in the radio field. Television is the second biggest medium. A lot of the growth that I expect to come in the future with the proliferation of the, television channels will be via satellite. We have no cable in South Africa. Somehow we never got to the cable development. As I know, in Europe it's a very substantial means of distributing signals. But here it's either terrestrial transmission or now satellite coming to add to it.
So how many transmitters do you operate?
Centec operates over 1,000 transmitters from 168 transmitting stations
What's happening about the external broadcasting? You say that shortwave is not important domestically, but looking at the size of the Meyerton transmitter site just south of Johannesburg, it's a pretty important operation. In fact, it's expanding, apparently.
What happened at the time is that we ended up with spare transmission capacity. Fortunately, the opportunity arose where some other international broadcasters, such as the BBC World Service and Deutsche Welle for some time, and Voice of America needed relay facilities and came to us. So that at our main station now, we are serving a number of customers from our available facilities.
10 years ago, the South African Defence Forces were running all sorts of clandestine operations to destabilise neighbouring countries. Cuban music into Angola and rumours into Zimbabwe.
You are listening to the English Service of Radio Truth, the station that brings you the real news and the true facts surrounding current events.
Towards the end of the 80s, the Defence Forces went further, ordering 100-kilowatt transmitters, which are now being relocated to Meyerton. The story goes that these were to be used for jamming foreign broadcasters.
Yes, they were. The authorities, we were never involved in it ourselves, but the appropriate authorities in the military direction, they did build some stations. But the political changes occurred before they were put to use, and the equipment then was available and as a public enterprise, and them having been paid for by public money, it was decided to turn them over to us, and we've moved them now to our station and installing them, which would increase our capacity.
That's at Meyerton?
That is at Meyerton.
You have a domestic shortwave service too. Do you see a day when that will then close down?
That's a very interesting question. I think perhaps not. I thought so at one point in time. People tend to think that shortwave is old technology and you keep moving to new technology. But we see in Africa that it has an ongoing life and it serves some very sparsely populated areas, but it also gives a bit of an overspill service into neighboring countries. And whenever a transmitter is off the air, we do get quite a reaction from those, and it indicates that there's some need for that service. So I'm not so sure that it will be turned off. It's only a few transmitters in any case.
During the apartheid era, Radio RSA experimented with television, but found it almost impossible to market the programs, except in parts of the United States. Now that the political situation has changed, Lebona Musia hopes they can try again.
There is a lot of pressure now, both within and outside South Africa, that there should be some form of an African television service. We are inundated at the moment by CNN, BBC World Service, Deutsche Welle, I think, has got its own service, CFI from France, NBC, you name them, even Mnet through multi-choice, what you call here NetHold. But all these stations, even including, you know, an Mnet, their programming is very European or very American. There is no focusing or programming that reflects the African situation. The problem, of course, is that it has to be economically viable. It will be profit more or less motivated. The whole question is, will we be able to make money out of it? I think it's important that we have a channel that will be inform, educate, as well as, of course, entertain. So the whole thing is, I have been talking to Soli Kotani, who is the former director general of the Buputatswana Broadcasting Corporation, which is having Bob TV, which is broadcasting to Africa as well as part of Europe. And he was telling me that, yes, Bob TV is a success in terms of making money. And they are carrying news and they are carrying advertisement. And some people say that they used to have good programs in the past.
But you mentioned finances there. I mean, the SAB is planning to sell off some of its radio stations, isn't it?
Yes, we are selling 6 of our provincial commercial stations, yes.
Is that going to have an impact on the income?
It is, definitely. As you know, that 75% of the SABC's revenue comes from advertising, and these 6 stations that are being sold were some of the critical source of revenue. 25% is from TV licenses. So, that's going to have a big impact on sources of revenue. And that's why, for instance, the SABC itself is talking to government about the funding, and the government has agreed on condition that the SABC identifies projects like, for instance, education, which is being financed through the Ministry of Education.
How's commercial radio doing in South Africa?
Well, it's doing well. I mean, the only independent commercial station so far at the moment is 702, which is on AM, on medium wave. And it's doing well, really. So there is a... Particularly 702 has done very well to... I mean, Metro is also partly on medium wave, but it's mainly in the inside the country on FM. Commercial radio is doing very well in terms of... the stations that I'm talking about, the six, including our national stations, which we are not selling, which is Radio Metro and Radio and 5FM, they are really doing very well, of course. But I mean, you know that radio and TV advertising are two ball games. You know, most of them are. I mean, SABC makes 38% of its revenue from radio advertising; the rest comes from TV. So. Radio is a success through the marketing arm of the SABC called Radio Active.
And when will those stations be sold?
Around about July, August.
The SABC will be organising a symposium about the future of external broadcasting in Africa at the end of May. We'll keep you informed.
And next from Media Network on Radio Netherlands, we cross to Arthur Cushion on the line from Invercargill, New Zealand. Arthur, we note that the Radio New Zealand commercial network has finally been sold.
Yes, it has, Diana. It's been sold to a consortium of three groups for $89 million, and that includes the Radio New Zealand commercial network of 41 stations. And here's part of the official announcement.
The sale is conditional on a final resolution of the legal challenge from the Māori Council and other groups. The bidder, New Zealand Radio Network, is jointly owned by New Zealand Herald publishers Wilson and Horton, Australian company Provincial Newspapers Holdings Limited, and American company Clear Channel Communications.
And the radio reading service in New Zealand has also gone 24 hours, at least according to news on the internet.
Yes, there is, Diana. They moved to a 24-hour day broadcast. The period between 10:00 and 20:00 is being taken up as a relay of Radio New Zealand's national radio, and that's on two frequencies, 1602 and 3935. Now, they have another transmission which is in daylight hours in this country. That's 20:00 to 0600, and that's now on 5960. That frequency replaced 7290 recently. From Guam, KSDA Broadcasting English, an extensive change of schedule, but some of the ones in this area are 10:00, 9370, and at 10:30 it's 9530 kilohertz. Japan, and Radio Japan is using the BBC relay base at Kranji in Singapore, and their transmissions to Oceania, 0500 to 0900, 11920, and from 1900 to 2100 it's 6035, and both of those transmissions are giving excellent reception since this was put into service. Malaysia, and the Voice of Malaysia, which opens at 0555 UTC on 15295, has news at 0600, and at 0609 they announce as the Voice of Islam. So it looks as if Malaysia is using two slogans from Kuala Lumpur, the Voice of Malaysia and the Voice of Islam. The Philippines, FEBC Manila, English from 0930 to 1100 is on 11635. Saipan, KHBI, English programs to the South Pacific, 0800 is on 9425, and at 0900 they're on 13615 kilohertz.
Thanks, Arthur.
And that's all we can squeeze into this edition of the programme. On behalf of Diana and myself,
have a pleasant weekend.
I I've been doing some listening between 3 and 30 megawatts. It's, some people get static, some people get far off countries. I just get a headache.
Serving the universe from Flevo, Radio Netherlands, with relays in Russia, Bonaire, and Madagascar. Any questions?
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.